You're listening to the David Knight Show. Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
It's Wednesday, October the 23rd, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to take a look at the outrage from the Democrat lynch mob when President Trump called it a lynching. And at the same time, you hear these same Democrats saying, well, it's a type of drudge. What are we going to do? Is there anybody else out there besides these two dozen people who have come forward to run for president? It's looking pretty bad for them. And so now they may go on a candidate hunt, or maybe we could call it a witch hunt. And we know which witch wants to be out front, don't we? So we're going to be taking a look at Hillary Clinton and what is going on with this. We're going to take a look at lynch mobs that have been identified by various Democrats in the past. It doesn't have anything to do with race. I mean, we talk about kangaroo courts. Is that something we can only say about Australia? I mean, there's even a disagreement about the etymology of that phrase. Did it come from Australia, or did it come from the claim jumpers during the gold mine rush in the 1840s, 1849? The 49ers, not the football team, but the actual miners, jumping other people's claims. And so they put up these really quick courts, and they didn't have any due process. And that's the whole point about a lynch mob, isn't it, as well? It's a mob. It's a mob. Mobocracy is what we've got now. It's what the Democrats are pushing. Democracy. Now, that's not even in view anymore. It's a mobocracy. You got loud people getting violent in the streets, having their way with everybody else. That's really what's happening with the Democrats. But we're going to take a look at that. We're going to take a look at some of this transgender insanity. I've got a quick follow-up to that story yesterday, the amazing story that about James, the now I believe he's 7 years old, and his father, who was here for an interview in studio out of Dallas. SaveJames.com is how you can help this father, who has had not only his divorced wife, but an activist family judge dictating to him that he has to go along with his divorced wife's notion that their seven-year-old son wants to be a woman, not a man. And she has discerned this, and no other opinion is allowed. See, it's hateful. It's hateful to tell the kid that, you know, point out that he's got a biological gender. No. That cannot be. That cannot be discussed. And the worst part about this, which came out yesterday, a little bit later after I covered the story, is the fact that these twins were a product of in vitro fertilization, and it wasn't even the mother's eggs that were used. She admitted that during the trial. And look, I understand that you can love an adopted child. We've got two adopted children. One of my favorite expressions is on a portrait that we have for my daughter. And it says, "You didn't grow under my heart, you grew in my heart." I don't think this case, however, is about love. I think it's about revenge, personally. I wasn't told that by the father when he came here. He didn't say anything about that. I'm just kind of guessing here, based on my lifetime experience of human nature. But you have a court telling the biological, even though the mother has no biological connection to this child, they're telling the biological father that he cannot call his biological son by his biological name and gender and point that out, right? He is a male, and they're going to take care of that. They're going to chemically castrate him at the age of 8. This is absolutely insane. And we're going to talk about what Elizabeth Warren wants to chime in on that as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
It's Wednesday, October 23rd, year of our Lord, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to take a look at what's going on. Actually, Facebook is having a bad couple of days here. And I couldn't be happier about it. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the fake news. You've actually got, and we're going to get into this in more detail, you've actually got some journalists trying to trademark the phrase fake news so they can restrict its use. It's gotten that bad for the mainstream media. You know, President Trump popularized it. We coined it. Probably should have trademarked it ourselves so that we could put it in there. But yeah, it was Alex Jones and InfoWars that came up with fake news. And I'm glad that President Trump started using it, popularized it, and it really has been a very effective way to describe them. And we could also describe CNN as the CIA news network. We've used all these different phrases. Gerald Celente and his prostitutes. And so we're going to take a look at Pravda USA as well. But before we do, I just want to get into some of the headline news and updates, because as we see the Democrat mob, a lynch mob, if you will, a lynch mob, objecting to the term lynch. You can't use that except for people, black people, right? Except that they did. They used it over and over again. All these same Democrats who were around, most of them, they're so old, they've been there for so long. The Democrat leadership was making speeches during the impeachment of Bill Clinton, and they were using those phrases. So we've got the actual clips of these people using the term in a political context to defend their party's president when he was being impeached. But I guess it's okay. You know, but we were told that Bill Clinton was the first black president. Remember that? We haven't really had a black president yet. Barack Obama is half white, even though he passes as 100% black. You've got Elizabeth Warren, who wants to be the first Native American president, but she doesn't really have any objective biological connection to that. And of course, you have Robert Francis O'Rourke, the Irishman, who is a trans Hispanic and wants to pretend that he is Hispanic. He's not going anywhere either. And so they have a candidate search. They have such weak candidates. The Democrats are saying, we got to find somebody else. And so we'll talk about the upcoming witch hunt as Hillary Clinton is holding herself forth as the witch that they need to succeed. Which witch will they get? Well, we may get Elizabeth Warren. Let's hope not. But let's take a look at the latest development that happened yesterday. It's really amazing to me that you have a you have the Ukraine special envoy, Kurt Volker, testified earlier this month. Yeah, there she is. Just in time for Halloween, maybe she will jump into the debate. I think she, like perhaps Bloomberg, will want to wait until after the debates are pretty much over, so they don't have to undergo any scrutiny or actually have to get on stage. It's very difficult for her. She has these eye things. She tends to collapse under stress. So, and of course, Michael Bloomberg, he wants to be a big man, and he thinks that has something to do with his height. So unlike Julian Castro, he would need at least two apple boxes to get himself up to the same height as the other candidates. He doesn't want to look bad. He thinks that'll make him look bad if he doesn't have the same stature. But, of course, his stature is not based on his height or his money. It's based on the fact that he is a crony capitalist socialist. That's really what he is. And he can't hide for that. But let's take a look at how they are, how the Democrats are manipulating this. Again, it was earlier this month that we had the Ukraine special envoy, Kurt Volker, that reportedly exonerated President Trump. Now, his testimony has never come out. We haven't gotten a transcript. We haven't gotten a leak of testimony that was made to the Democrats in Congress that would exonerate President Trump. They don't want that information to get out. But we had yesterday another individual who came in and cast aspersions on President Trump, said that there was a quid pro quo with Ukraine. And that came out immediately, instantly, lightning fast. And it went to the New York Times. And they said it was excruciatingly detailed. And they have all the details immediately. We still haven't heard from the other testimony that would exonerate President Trump. And President Trump responded by saying this is a lynching. Because it is. It absolutely is. We're going to talk about that. But just to contrast these two and to take a look first as part of the news here. What did this U.S. ambassador say? This is U.S. diplomat to Ukraine, William B. Taylor. And what he did was he said he had expressed his concerns in a September 9th text message to the U.S. ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland, saying, "I think it's crazy to withhold security assistance for help with a political campaign." And so let's take a look at the timeline here. When was this call made? July 25th. When did he start putting this out? September the 9th. Now, the complaint was filed August the 12th. So the phone call is made July 25th. The whistleblower complaint is made August the 12th. He sends a text message a month later, says, "I think it's crazy to withhold security assistance for help with a political campaign." And Sondland, the U.S. ambassador to the EU, replied, "Bill, I believe you're incorrect about President Trump's intentions. The president has been crystal clear, no quid pro quos of any kind." Okay, so that's kind of interesting. Now, there's another data point that you need to add to this timeline. And I talked about this when it was in the whistleblower complaint. In the very whistleblower complaint, it talks about how on the Ukraine side, this began, and we had stories from John Solomon on the Hill and so forth, talking about the revisitation, the reopening of corruption, the things surrounding Biden and the firing of that prosecutor that went back to March in Ukraine. So that was already happening. And when President Trump called at the end of July, 4 months later, it was, as you see from the call transcript that President Trump released right away, you see that the ambassador is the one who said, "We need to drain our swamp over here. We got a lot of corruption over here." To which Trump says, yeah, Biden was bragging about how he got your prosecutor fired. You going to look into that? That is not a quid pro quo. That is a response to the corruption that has been going on in Ukraine for quite some time that everybody knows about. So that's the timeline. March, Ukrainians are already looking this stuff up. 4 months later, President Trump calls to congratulate the new president. The new president says, "We are going to start draining our swamp and looking at the corruption here." And then President Trump said that. Then a month, it's 2 weeks later, you had the complaint filed by the whistleblower, which was a complaint based on hearsay. The whistleblower was not there. He just heard this coffee shop talk or whatever, around the water cooler. And then a month later, you have this back and forth that Taylor is talking about. Now, they're talking about this as if Taylor witnessed the call. Taylor didn't witness the call. Perhaps at that point in time, he had witnessed the whistleblower complaint and hadn't noticed the timeline there. The time is important. The time is important. And so as he's looking at this, talking about Burisma, talking about Biden, he said he drew a very direct line in his testimony in the series of events, reports the New York Times, that he described between President Trump's decision to withhold funds and refuse a meeting with Zelensky unless there was a public pronouncement by him of investigations of Burisma and the so-called 2016 election conspiracy theory. See, it's a conspiracy theory if you talk about the corruption, if you talk about the fact that Alexandria Chalupa with the DNC went there to try to get dirt on President Trump. That's a conspiracy theory. Look, it's just like Hillary and the DNC. When people inside the DNC released that information about her, she immediately invented this Russian thing to distract attention. And now when people start to look at Biden, it's like, "Whoa, wait a minute. Let's look at this other stuff. Trump had a phone call." We'll be right back. Stay with us. Wasserman Schultz, who of course is not biased or prejudiced or partisan at all, right? The former head of the DNC, giving a characterization of the testimony of somebody that criticized President Trump. Again, he did not hear the phone call, but it doesn't matter. If you have somebody who exonerates President Trump, that's embargoed by the Democrats. But if it is somebody that can cast aspersion on President Trump, because that's what this is really about. They know they're not going to get a conviction. There is nothing here. But it's the same pattern that you see from the Democrats all the time. Number one, projecting their crimes onto other people. Number two, you got to realize that only Republicans can commit crimes. And the biggest crime is to investigate what the Democrats did, their crimes. Those are called conspiracy theories if you actually open up an investigation. And that's exactly what Wasserman Schultz said, and the New York Times unquestioningly repeated. So you're supposed to ignore Hillary Clinton. Pay attention to those Russians. You're supposed to ignore Joe Biden. Pay attention to that phone call. They always deflect with a red herring. And that's what's going on right now. No questions about whistleblowers or leaks against President Trump, but only examination of his motives. And no examination of the documents. That's the key thing. That's why they do it this way. President Trump is brilliant. Immediately declassified the phone call transcript. He declassified the whistleblower complaint. But they still won't look at the documents. The mainstream media won't look at the documents. They don't want you looking at the documents. They want you thinking about Ukraine or Russia or whatever. It's always a distraction. It's a red herring. And when the foxes are on the the hounds are on the fox, they take a sneaky fish, a red herring. And the animal rights activists would run out after the fox went by and drag the stinky red herring across the trail to throw the hounds off the scent. That's what Hillary Clinton did when insiders released the documents about the DNC, showing how she had rigged it. And now she is licking her chops on the sidelines again, hoping to get back in. And I hope she does. I hope she does. They think that Hillary Clinton is going to be any better than this, these two dozen clowns and jokers that they've got. Now, joker is probably a better way to put it. It is, when you see these CNN debates and town halls, it's like putting a window and a camera inside of Arkham Asylum. And so now we have Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee talking about bringing Sondland back for further testimony because they believe that he wasn't forthcoming with him. So if you got a conflict between one guy and another guy, which one is telling the truth? Well, obviously, it's the one that agrees with their foregone conclusions, right? So somebody's going to validate what they want. Well, he's telling the truth. We've got to get this other guy back in, get him to change his story, right? Because he conflicts with what I want to be true. Now, the other election that they're in the process of overturning that went against the globalists in 2016, of course, is Brexit. A quick update on that. Tuesday night, Boris Johnson says, this is reported by Daily Beast. I'm going to skip over the spin part here for the most part. Boris Johnson's do-or-die pledge to take Britain out of the European Union by October the 31st. Well, actually, it's not his idea, Daily Beast. I know. But this was actually the hard deadline that was put out by Theresa May. So, well, we're going to extend it to October 31st. We keep delaying this, and they have delayed it now since 2016. So it's been delayed by more than 3 years. And so now they're saying that they are handing the initiative to the EU to effectively trigger a new British election. See, if you don't get the results you like, you just ignore the election. And you say, we're going to keep trying until you give me the results that I want ahead of time. Just like what the Democrats are doing with their quote-unquote investigation, their impeachment inquiry. All right? So anyway, Johnson responded to the 322-308 vote defeat on fast-tracking this by halting the passage of the deal altogether. And they, of course, they have to fast track it because they've got the hard Brexit date of October the 31st, and we are here at October the 23rd. So they said, let's get it done by this weekend. They said, no, we're not going to do it. And they passed a law earlier this month, actually the end of last month. Johnson is not allowed to negotiate to shorten whatever extension the EU chooses. So the parliament there, even though the British people wanted to get out, parliament says, no, we're going to let the EU tell us what the deadline is going to be. And then we're going to let them continue to delay it. And so immediately, Donald Tusk, president of the European Council, tweeted out that he was talking to leaders in Brussels about issuing a written extension likely to delay the Brexit deadline until January the 31st. So we'll just kick it down the road another 3 months or so. If confirmed, British politicians would be under heavy pressure to agree to hold an election and seek a fresh mandate. Let's not call it a fresh mandate. Let's call it a different result. Acceptable to the Remainers, acceptable to the European Union, acceptable to the globalists. Let's just keep going on. Let's not have a hard exit. No. We'll try this again until we get the result we want. You know, we have NBC News now. They've had stories that have come out about sexual misconduct within NBC. And we've just had the whistleblower, the CNN whistleblower, who's going to be on live today with Alex Jones. We'd hoped we'd have him on this program, but he is getting in too late to be on this program. But he will be on live with Alex today. And the latest that has come out from Project Veritas and the CNN whistleblower is the fact that there was sexual assault, Me Too allegations that were covered up by CNN. Same thing happened at NBC. The NBC News president, Noah Oppenheim, is now facing complaints of promoting his own products and self-dealing, in addition to the alleged quashing of stories that expose sexual misconduct by powerful men who did business inside NBC. Several NBC staffers this week expressed outrage that Oppenheim and his wife Allison have been benefiting from NBC's on-air promotion of apparently lucrative side projects on which Today Show Savannah Guthrie had been collaborating with the boss's wife. This is a big deal, folks. On NBC and on their morning show today, the Today Show, you can imagine that an ad there costs tens of thousands of dollars easily, perhaps more, because they got to pay these people tens of millions of dollars. That might cost $100,000 to run an ad on the Today Show. Or $1 million to run it on there. I don't know what their ad rate is, but I can tell you it's a lot of money. So if you use that time as NBC president to promote your own product, and see what he did with his wife and Savannah Guthrie, who is the host of the Today Show, wrote a book, and they're promoting their book for free. No ad fees at all to NBC. It's kind of like what these celebrities did when they got their kids into Ivy League school. So you're supposed to pay the Ivy League school a lot of money. Instead, they paid a third party a lot of money, and the Ivy League school got kind of upset about that. Will NBC get upset about it? And wait until you find out what this book is. I'll tell you about that when we come back. Stay with us.
It's your move. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
So what is this book that was written by the president of NBC News, Noah Oppenheim, his wife, and the star, the host of NBC's Today Show, Savannah Guthrie. Savannah Guthrie and the NBC News president's wife wrote a book together, and then they promoted it for free on NBC News. What's wrong with that, right? Well, it's kind of like Hillary Clinton, right? When you are in charge of being Secretary of State, you have everybody in your organization understand and sign a statement about national security and protecting official secrets and so forth. And then the person at the top defies all that. And that's what this guy did. Even though all the employees understand they can't do something like this, promote their own products, he was doing it, along with the Today Show host, Savannah Guthrie. What was the book? Oh, it was targeting children. Princesses Wear Pants. Princesses Wear Pants. Yes, their feminist agenda. Oh, politically correct, right? At the same time, he's tolerating sexual misconduct by the people inside their news organization. He is virtue signaling to the feminists. Princesses Wear Pants. And the follow-up sequel, Princesses Save the World. Now, I understand that this is in talks with Marvel Comics, you know, Marvel Films and so forth. They're going to, Disney is trying to decide whether they're going to adapt this into the Marvel Universe or maybe the Star Wars Universe, right? Because that's basically what they have reworked both of those franchises into. Princesses saving the world or the universe, whichever whichever case applies. Maybe Disney will not have to talk to them about this. Maybe they will just file a intellectual copyright infringement ID on this, because it was Disney who really kind of invented this. Well, not invented it, but they really popularized it more than anybody else with their two franchises, Marvel and Star Wars, that princesses wear pants and save the world. They become men. Because if you really want to get something done, you become a man, right? That's exactly the underscore of all this, that they don't want you to, the undercurrent, that they don't really want you to pay any attention to, is that if you're willing to accomplish something, you become a man. No, really what they want to do is make sure that we don't have any families. The most important job in the world is the hand that rocks the cradle. And we have turned that over to the government, because the government told us that women had better things to do. And there is no better thing to do, quite frankly. That's far more important than putting bread on the table, is installing the right values in your kids and protecting them from the predators like they're being exposed to in the government school and these other institutions. Don't turn your kids over to institutions. We already have an institution for raising children. It's called the family, and that's why they're trying to destroy it. And so, but they've got, you know, a big promotion going on. Not only can they get free airtime on NBC to promote their princess series, but they're also developing it into an animation series. Drew Barrymore's got a production company to do just exactly that. And they have princess-branded kids' pajama sets that just went on sale at Nordstrom, along with copies of their first book. So it's a, you know, great way you can virtue signal about feminism and supporting women while you allow the rest of the people to sexually abuse their employees from their position of power. And while we're talking about sex and gender issues, we now have, as it's just come out, Jonathan Yanev, who goes by the name of Jessica. This is a transgender man. He's a biological man. So, yes, I will. It's not even dead naming him, because he's still using that name on social media. He's using it for his business. He hasn't undergone any sexual alteration. And that's the issue, folks, because this man who wants to pretend that he's a woman also wants to go to particular salons and have them perform, shall we say, some very delicate procedures on him. Quite frankly, Jonathan, if I wanted to have these women at the salons wax genitals, I would want to go to somebody who actually has done this before. So I will volunteer, even though he's lost his lawsuit against multiple salons, trying to force them under the Canadian equivalent of what the Democrats are trying to run through, the Equality Act, where they want to say that you have to, you know, we're going to go from forcing people to bake cakes to forcing them to wax genitals. That takes a cake, doesn't it? But I would suggest to Jonathan, since he's lost this lawsuit and he can't find anybody to wax his genitals, come to me. I'll do it for you. You may not like the result, but at least I can save you the gender reassignment surgery. I'll give it to you good and hard, exactly what you want. Well, the legal system gave it to Jonathan good and hard. The Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms issued a news release declaring victory. Happened one day after the Canadian federal elections, where the intersectional virtue signaling Justin Trudeau managed to hang on by his polished fingernails. But human rights legislation, said the court, does not require a service provider to wax a type of genitals that they are not trained for and have not consented to wax. Let me tell you something. This decision is not a victory for sanity. It is not a victory for liberty. This, quite frankly, in my opinion, is all about intersectionality, not about liberty. Intersectionality, in case you don't know, this is something invented by the people who do this for a living at universities. They invent ways to overthrow our culture, our society, and create an insane society. Take it down. To deconstruct society. Intersectionality is basically ranking different groups based on the power structures. And so, you know, if you've got two minority status things, you outrank somebody who's only got one. And, you know, we have different rankings based on different races, different sexes, different sexual orientation. You get extra points for that, right? It's a point system. Think of it that way. Intersectionality. Where do these people all intersect? Well, you know, click this box and that box and that box. That person goes to the top of the line in the intersectional ranking. And so this guy's problem is that he harassed women of color and immigrants and religious communities that were not Christian. That's the problem with this guy. He came after a woman, an immigrant, and a non-Christian, but still having a religion. And all of those things, you know, having a non-Christian religion, that gets you intersectional points right there. All right, this woman was a Sikh, not a Muslim. But this organization represented five of the more than 10 workers that he brought complaints against. They were immigrants from visible minority or highly religious communities, and they looked at his social media history of racist and xenophobic remarks. So what happens if you are a transgender man and you make racist remarks and you attack women of color, immigrants as well, and non-Christian, religious non-Christians? Oh, you go to the bottom of the intersectional barrel. Which is where he is right now. Alex interviewed him, and Alex just had this guy, just let him talk. Just go ahead and talk. Tell us your story. No comments necessary when this guy starts talking. And he was talking long and loud on social media. So he has to pay $2,000 to three of the five women, including the one woman who had to close her entire business because of all this litigation, the Sikh lady. And so we'll have more about the insanity of the transgender tyranny when we come back. That's what the T stands for. Is it tyranny? Actually, it should be P for pedophilia, because that's what this is really about when they push it on kids. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. And when you look at how things have rapidly escalated, it's not a good week for Facebook, and we'll be getting into that later. But they're still moving. You know, Zook's favorite bodyguard is Booty Gay. That's really what he's trying to get an ally. He's trying to get this guy in. And, of course, Booty Gay's gotten more money from billionaires than anybody else. He's got more maximum contributors out of the billionaire group. Bundling lots of money, being promoted by lots of people. And Zook really needs a lot of political cover in Washington right now. I mean, he's been allied in the past with these people who helped him get into power and so forth. But he went a little bit too far too fast. you know, as one of the leaders of attacking independent media, InfoWars first. You know, you have Tim Cook as well as Zuckerberg. They're very well connected. They got an incredible amount of money. They got more people using their products or on their platforms, and most countries have citizens. And they all work together all at the same time within about a 12-hour period to purge InfoWars as completely from the internet as they could. And now we see that some of this is starting to blow back on him. People are starting to talk about the other things that they have done in terms of their monopolistic actions against other companies, but also the pushback against Libra, which is now the cryptocurrency that he wanted to do. He wanted to make it the global cryptocurrency, and he promised governments, because he knew that he was going to be stepping on their toes by taking away their central bank control of their fiat currencies. And so he promised them that it would be a global ID. That was part of his white paper. But even that was not enough. So he's got to have some more political allies. And he is busy trying to make political allies and try to get his friends elected into office. Folks, if you want to keep us on air, we're having to fight for your fundamental rights, not just the freedom of the press. That's about your ability to be able to see and hear things. So that really is your freedom as well. But also your freedom to speak that was also trashed by these people who did a rope-a-dope. Come on in. Everything is free. You can all come. It's going to be free. You are the product. They used InfoWars and Alex Jones to get more people into their live streaming at Facebook. And then after they established that, left that out there for free. Just take a look at what's happening. If you watch a video on YouTube, they didn't have any commercials for years and years and years. Where did they get all this money? Very interesting question, isn't it? Yeah, Wall Street and venture capital firms, many of them affiliated with the CIA, the NSA, DARPA. Oh, just all this access to money, just like DARPA is giving millions of dollars to an organization that's going to guard our elections, election guard. They're going to count the votes. And of course, DARPA and Microsoft have already set up NewsGuard to guard what you see and hear. Folks, if you don't want that to happen, you got to keep free speech alive, the free press alive, the independent press alive. We really do need your help. We've got great specials right now, 40 to 70% off of dozens of products at InfoWarsStore.com. We have free shipping and double Patriot points as well. You can get a whole host of products like BrainForce Plus, 50% off. We have other products that are going to help you to sleep, help you to fight inflammation that are natural, safe, and effective. 50% off products like Bod Ease and Knockout, all natural supplements to fight inflammation or to help you get to sleep. 50% off our Super Blue toothpaste. Great toothpaste. It doesn't have fluoride in it. It does have iodine, and it has nano silver to fight bacteria and virus. That's 50% off. We have 70% off Survival Shield X-ray nascent iodine. Take a look at the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com right now. 40, 50, 70% off dozens of products, all with free shipping and double Patriot points, InfoWarsStore.com. All right, getting back to this Yonef character. Maybe that's safe for the woke people. I just call him a character. Oh, I called him him. Well, he called himself him. He used male pronouns. That was his crime. And now he's been slapped down by this Canadian Human Rights Tribunal. Isn't it funny how they call themselves human rights tribunals or commissions when they're trashing our human rights? We don't have any human rights. See, in this particular case, again, he came after women of color, immigrants, who had religious convictions and they weren't Christians. Now, you know, when you see that when they come after a white male Christian, oh, now you're at the very, very bottom of the intersectional pyramid there. But this guy came after those types of people, wanted them to not bake a cake, but to wax his genitals that he hadn't bothered to change. He hadn't even bothered to change his name, really. Still going by the same name on social media, using male pronouns, a male name, on his LinkedIn and various social media accounts as late as November of 2018 after he had sued these people. And so, as a lawyer for this group defending these women in the salon said, It is both professionally and personally legitimate for any female aesthetician, I guess, aesthetics, I don't know, to limit their services to female genitalia. His complaints were effectively asserting that it should be made a legal precedent that female aestheticians not be allowed to refuse male-bodied clients, not on religious grounds, not on cultural grounds, not because of their comfort level or their personal preferences, right? Because it's only his personal preferences that matter. Not even because they did not have the professional skills or the equipment required to successfully perform the very specific procedure. This guy, you don't want, I mean, this is like going to a barber college. No dispersions on a barber college, but you know, getting somebody, you're going to get married the next day, let's say. And so you decide you're going to go to a barber college to get your hair done, male or female. You would want to get somebody who is experienced if it's something really important. And I would think that would be really important. That could be a very, very eye-opening procedure. I really wish they had done, like I said, just done it for him good and hard. Give him exactly what he wants. But as we move on, as ridiculous as that case is, we have another case that is both ridiculous and tragic that I talked about yesterday. The mom, and again, I interviewed the father, Jeffrey Younger, when he was here. James Younger, the young boy, who, beginning in a very early age, after the parents divorced, the mother decided that the young boy wanted to be a girl and started addressing him as a girl, started dressing him as a girl as well. Told all the people at school, girl. And, of course, that institution is more than happy to comply with any kind of gender confusion, as are the courts, the family courts especially. So Jeffrey Younger came on, and this is in Texas, folks. He came on, he talked about this particular case. He knew that the judge was siding with a mother, so he wanted to have a jury. And this is the thing that blew me away, that in Texas, a Texas jury, 11 out of 12 people said that the mom is going to be allowed to do a chemical castration to this young boy at the age of 8. And the father doesn't have any say-so on this, or they're gagging the biological dad. Can't refer to his son by his biological gender. And yet the mother is not the biological mother. It came out during the court testimony that were twins, they came out, and they were the product of in vitro fertilization and another egg donor. And again, I look at this, and it doesn't have any, it's not to say that you can't love your child if they're adopted. We have two adopted children, and we love them no differently. But this is not love, folks. This is the kind of thing that we see happening over and over again. Usually you see it with kind of stage parents. They wanted to have the bright lights of celebrity and the theater and movies, and they couldn't make it, so they push their kids and they destroy their kids' life. We've seen this over and over again. Michael Jackson's a good example of this. They abuse their kids, and it's become something of a trope. It's so common. I think that there's a lot of that that is present in a lot of these sick parents who are abusing their kids. But you have to understand that there are institutions that are waiting in the wings to do it to your kids, even if that's not your will, and they will do it against your will as a parent. I've covered many times parents where the school has gone in, gender confused the child, and was against the parents' wishes, giving them unalterable drugs that were going to basically chemically castrate them or have mastectomies on young girls 13, 14 years old. This is shameful, and pedophilia is what it is.
Making sense common again. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
You know, one of the side effects of the transgender gaslighting that's going on to children. Again, this is to erase the age of consent. Jeffrey Epstein wanted that erased. Alan Dershowitz has written. Ivanka, his lawyer who wanted it erased as well. They want to pretend that there is no age of consent for sex. Now, you know, look at all the other things that they have age limits on. Look at the things that they want to raise the age limit on. They don't want these kids with cars. They don't want them with guns, right? Oh, you got to wait till you're 21. And then when you have a psychologist who has studied the transgender psychological issues for decades saying, nobody should do this until be allowed to get state funds. He's a Canadian, so he wants the government to pay for it, but nobody should get the government to pay for this for them until they are 21 years old and have lived under their new identity for at least 2 years, because he's seen too many people who have regrets about this. And you're going to do this to a kid 6, 7, 8 years old? At 8, you're going to irreversibly chemically castrate this young boy? SaveJames.com. It makes me sick. This is a sick society. On the way home yesterday, I had bumped up my limit as to what I could stream, so I was reduced to listening to local radio. And the local radio station here was talking about this. And they wanted to just dance around this issue because they didn't want the LGBT tyrants and mob to come after them. And so it's like, oh, well, that's very, well, I could kind of see both sides of this, that type of thing. Look, folks, we don't have to accept this being pushed on us. Get in their faces. Don't let them do this to your kids or to other kids. We don't have to live like this. This is disgusting. This is a Jeffrey Epstein agenda. And I've said that every day that I talked about Jeffrey Epstein. I said, all right, look at what he's doing. Pretty sick, isn't it? Do you understand what's happening to your kids in the government school institutions and so forth? Do you understand what they're doing? Well, let's talk a little bit about this. You know, tangentially, as we talk about suicide rates and how this kind of messing with kids' minds and their bodies in a very perverted way, and it is a perversion, especially to do this to kids, to erase the age of consent when it comes to sexual issues. You know, they started out talking to your kids at very early ages, way before puberty, talking to them about heterosexual sex. Oh, well, we don't want them to get pregnant. And we think that they need to know ahead of time, and it's just for their protection. We don't want them molested by people. And now they are the molesters, right? They have shown that was their agenda. From the drag queen story hours to the forced gender reassignment by the schools, that is their agenda. Wake up. Stop this. Don't allow this to happen in your community. It's not enough just to get your kid away from these pedophiles. And it's coming out of Washington. Who would have thought that the place that gave us people like Dennis Hastert, elevated him to a position of being the Republican Speaker of the House for decades after they knew, before he ever ran for office the first time, they knew he was a pedophile, a wrestling coach, using his position of authority to come after young people, to dominate them. And they groomed him to become the Speaker of the House. Who would have thought that with a situation like that in Washington and with an education department that was created in Washington, who would have thought that they would push this kind of stuff on us, right? That's who these people are. That's the other part of the Jeffrey Epstein expose. Look at how he is connected to everybody who has any power in our society, whether it is government or the big corporations. That is the essence of what these people are about. It's one of the ways that they express their power, by dominating you and your children. And there's no better way to dominate you than to do it with sexual acts. That's the sickness of this society. We'll talk about suicide rates, why they're exploding, and how the Daily Caller got it exactly wrong on SSRIs when we return. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Hey, You know, I was just talking about how this is a pedophile agenda. It is pedophiles who run our government, who make sure that the statute of limitations is incredibly short, 3 years, for children to talk about being abused. And Crew just handed me this article going back to November 2013. Coming from Slate, should we lower the age of consent to protect teenagers? See, that's what they did, to say, well, you know, we have to be the ones to educate children, and we'll do it to teenagers. Now we will do it to kids in elementary school. Now we'll do it to kids in kindergarten. Arresting parents who objected to that said, I think it's inappropriate to talk to my kids about sex at this age. Oh, well, no, now we're going to throw you in jail. We have a doctrine, we call it in loco parentis, in place of the parents. And our position here, said the court, is that when you bring your kids to the school and drop them off, you have abandoned your children to the state. That's their understanding of what's happened. You may not think of it that way, but that's what they think of it. And so, as I said, well, we got to do sex education to protect the teenagers. Now they're saying, well, we should lower the age of consent to protect teenagers. That was 6 years ago. And now they have lowered the age of consent. If you can decide what gender you are when you're 5 or 6 years old, if you can be permanently altered, then basically you can make the decision to consent to sex. If you can consent to gender reassignment, right, then you're obviously mature enough to do that. And so when we look at the long-term result of this and the increase in youth suicide rate in 10 years, does it have anything to do with that? A 56% jump in youth suicide rate in 10 years? I think it does. I would not be surprised. I can't prove it. This was a study that just came out with the data. It says, well, it's gone up by 56% in 10 years for youth. According to CDC data, in general, the U.S. population has had a 30% increase in suicide rates. Now, other people have their own interpretation as to what might be behind this. It may not be the gaslighting of kids, confusing them about gender. It may not have anything to do with that. But the Daily Caller says, well, maybe it has something to do with antidepressants. I would agree. They said there's a lot of different factors that could be there. It could be access to social media and the peer pressure that comes with that. I would agree with that. It could be the opioid crisis that we allowed, that the FDA and the federal government allowed Sackler and Purdue and Johnson & Johnson and these other people to make obscene profits. Had no problem with that, letting it run forever and ever. Yeah, that could have increased the suicide rates. Premature brains. Oh, you mean brains that haven't reached the age of consent? They're being messed with? Yeah, that might be a part of it, too. How about the media's role in all of this? Even kind of putting it out there, running a series on that multiple times. You know, look at this. This is something that will get you noticed, committing suicide. Nobody's paying attention to you? Well, just commit suicide, and then everybody will be weeping at your funeral. Well, that's a good way to make yourself popular. That's the media's role in all of this. But what is Big Pharmaceutical's role in this? Well, the amazing angle that was taken by the Daily Caller, and I usually agree with the Daily Caller, they took a big pharmaceutical angle on this. They believe that what's happening is people aren't taking their meds. They need to be taking those SSRI medications. And when the FDA put a black box warning on there, warning people that it actually makes you suicidal to take these SSRIs, we call them here and have called them here. Since I've been working here, we call them murder-suicide pills. I've interviewed the lady who runs a website, SSRIstories.net. And she's got hundreds of stories of what has happened to people when they change their medication. Now, you may be on medication, on SSRIs, and you may feel like it has helped you. I hope it has. But I would just give you a word of warning. Do not increase or decrease that medication. If you do so, do it extremely, extremely slowly. Because as I was interviewing her for SSRIStories.net, she explained it. It's really kind of like getting the bends. You know, if you're a scuba diver, one of the first things you learn when I took the classes is that, you know, if you every 30 feet, 33 feet, I think it is, that you go down in water, you double the atmospheric pressure. And then depending on how long you stay at a particular pressure level, it begins to dissolve the nitrogen that is present in the air. You know, nitrogen is in our air. It's in the air, the compressed air that you breathe. So that begins to dissolve into your bloodstream. If you come up very rapidly, that nitrogen will actually bubble out of your bloodstream, and it'll give you what's called the bends. It can kill you. And so that's why you have the decompression tables. And that's why, you know, depending on how long you have been at a given depth, you need to stay there and wait for a while and then come up gradually and slowly. Yeah, that's why it's a big problem if you go down deep and you run out of air. You may die from the bends. I had scuba diver instructors who were welders, and they'd had they'd been bent. They'd been had all kinds of accidents. I mean, it was almost like, remind me again why I'm taking this class. I mean, these instructors are, they kind of looked like Darth Vader without the helmet. I mean, they'd had some serious, serious accidents as commercial divers. It's a very dangerous thing. And it's a very dangerous thing to take SSRIs and to change your medication level quickly. It can cause people to have episodes. And one of the cases that I remember most vividly when she talked about this was a young man, and as people look at the, and this is where there might be a legitimate connection to the black box warning label. You know, when they put down there on the warning label, warning, antidepressants increase the risk of suicidal thinking and behavior, suicidally, in short-term studies in children and adolescents who have major depressive disorder and other psychiatric disorders. And so you look at that and you say, well, wait a minute, I'm taking that so that I don't have suicidal thinking. And this may make it worse. Maybe you've noticed this on the commercials on Fox News and CNN and MSNBC, all the cable companies, and broadcast as well. Their big corporate sponsors are big pharmaceutical companies. And if you listen to all the side effects that they're legally required to tell you very rapidly at the end of the story, while you see pictures of dogs and puppies and children running across fields in slow motion, and you hear all the horrific side effects being rattled off there. Many of those side effects are what you were taking it for in the first place. In other words, it exacerbates the very condition that you were taking it for in the first place. And so when people look at that and they look at the black box warning, as this one person said, the thing I haven't discussed very much is the fear of the treatments for mental illness and the black box warning that the FDA put on antidepressants many years ago, the risk of the increase in suicidal thoughts, said a clinical assistant professor. A lot of doctors who prescribe started thinking, without reading the details of the medication, this could cause my patients to commit suicide. Well, they would be right. Or if they look at this and they decide, well, you know, this is kind of dangerous. It's got other side effects. Maybe I'll adjust my medication. Maybe I'll start reducing it, and they do it too quickly. Like I said, the story that I remembered best was a young boy who was on these SSRIs. He reduced his medication too quickly. Next thing you know, he goes to school. He's got a rifle, and he's pointing it, gets in front of the class, points at the class, then he points it at himself, then he points it back at the class, and he points it at himself, and this is just going on. He was basically in a catatonic state. Fortunately, he didn't shoot anybody. They were able to get the rifle away from him. After he recovered under medical care, he remembered nothing at all about it. And we've had a lot of people in those SSRI stories that don't use guns. Don't use guns. They use pretty much anything. They might jump out of a window even. A lot of people committing suicide, but also a lot of people taking others with them, killing their children in many of these cases, and then committing suicide and so forth. It's a very dangerous thing. And the problem isn't the angle that they're taking here. Right? We can't talk parents into vaccinating their kids, said one of these people, wringing his hands. Well, we'll talk about why they're going to be mandating that. Are they going to be mandating SSRIs as part of their red flag legislation? Welcome back. As we're looking at the story from the Daily Caller, look at the suicide rate. And, of course, you know, the suicide rate has gone up. dramatically for teenagers. It's gone up pretty dramatically for adults as well. 30% for the U.S. population in general, but 56% for teenagers between the ages, they say young adults, between the ages of 10 and 24. And so they talk about all the different things that might be driving it, like social media. Yeah, I agree with that. The opioid crisis, the things that they see in the media, as well as premature brains, which brings us back to where we started on this age of consent thing, right? Why do we have an age of consent? Because of premature brains. You think differently when you're a child. Yeah, you know, I look at this and like I've told my wife, it's like, what are they doing to James Younger? That kid that they're going to chemically castrate. I said, he's like 6 or 7 years old. I mean, when I was that age, I thought I was Batman. So did my son when he was that age. I mean, you know, come on. You gotta, when you grow up, you think differently, right? We don't give these types of unalterable life-changing decisions. We don't let kids make those types of decisions. That's why we have all the laws against smoking tobacco and alcohol, because they're not able to make those kinds of decisions rationally, and they fall victim to people who are pushing drugs, tobacco, alcohol, or transgenderism, right? And so we look at this. The sad thing about this, however, is that Daily Caller takes the attitude that, well, you know, the problem is that people aren't taking enough SSRIs. They got afraid when the government got truthful and said, this will actually increase your risk of suicidal behavior and thoughts, but especially suicidal behavior. So, well, you know, once they put that on, you know, the doctors aren't prescribing this as much and people aren't taking their medications as much and antidepressant prescriptions decreased by 31%, says the Daily Caller, wringing their hands. So the message is, shut up and take your medication. Forget what it says on the box. Don't read the label. If it says that this stuff has got all kinds of things that are going to irritate your immune system, you know, the vaccine inserts. Don't read those inserts. You know, we said a few years ago, pregnant women not to take that, but don't read that now. Just take it. We want pregnant women to have those shots. Take your vaccines. Don't read the warning label. They don't want these people to read the warning label about SSRIs. And they're complaining to doctors as well in this story. Doctors, shut up. You need to be prescribing more of this stuff, just like they did with opioids, right? They got harangued by the big pharmaceutical media. You're not prescribing opioids enough. Now they say that opioids might be behind the suicidal increase. Yeah, probably. But they were the same people who, in this last decade, were telling the doctors they weren't prescribing enough because, you know, they need money for their corporate sponsors. That's disgusting. And what one doctor said, we can't talk parents into vaccinating their kids, for heaven's sakes. There's more research for that than anything. Yeah, I've done my research as well. And how do they respond to that? So imagine, with all the Dr. Google and negativity that's going around, when it comes to treatment with medication, parents say, I'm not giving my kids any antidepressants. That'll kill them, she said. And it's funny. First time I heard that phrase, Dr. Google, was from my own doctor. I started asking him some pointed questions about the side effects of medication he was prescribing me. And he goes, oh, you've been talking to Dr. Google? And I told my wife I didn't talk back to him. Yeah, I just said, we won't be going back. Same way that we did when I had a pediatrician angrily lecture us on not having fluoride for our kids. Well, I'll prescribe some fluoride tablets. Oh, thank you very much. You've been so helpful. We're never going back to this guy again. And the same thing with this guy. Wants to talk about Dr. Google. I told my wife, well, if he isn't going to do the research, one of us has to. I'll do it myself. It's my body. It's my responsibility. And I'm not going to turn that responsibility over to a doctor. If he's not interested in keeping up with the research, I'm not interested in going back to him either. So as they're talking about this, it says, so we have all these different things, the invention of the iPhone, social media like Facebook, and the withdrawal of antidepressants as a mainstream intervention by pediatricians. This is what's causing all of the increase in suicide, says the Daily Caller in their article and their sources. And that's the way the entire article is written. Absolutely astounding. Absolutely astounding. It's not the withdrawal of antidepressants as an intervention by pediatricians. It's actually the withdrawal symptoms if you get off of these things too quickly. So be very careful about that. But when I look at this, and when they start talking about, well, we can't talk parents into vaccinating their kids. Well, what's the answer to that? Well, we'll force them to be vaccinating their kids, right? And we got an update on that. Now, in New York, after New York and California are forcing people to get MMR vaccines, measles, mumps, and rubella, after forcing that and making that a condition for getting into school, now they're talking about doing that with the HPV vaccine. And so when I'll talk about that in just a second here. But when we go back and look at, well, we can't talk people into vaccinating their kids. They're doing research about this. I don't want them doing research. So we got to basically get InfoWars and anybody who would do the research and put the research out there and let you make up your mind. We got to shut them down on the internet. We got to shut them down on social media. It's not the people who are pulling back on this agenda are not the people who are going with the defaults. It's not people who are so poor that they got to work two jobs and they don't have time to do any of the research, who are just going along with what the authorities tell them, what the mob tells them. It's not those people. It's the people who typically who are having questions with this, as we saw in California. It was very wealthy people, people who had time where they could do their own research and they didn't like what they saw. And they don't want us giving that information to people who don't have the time in their life to just sit there and do research. And so they want to try to shut down independent media. And they want to force you, if they can't gaslight you, they want to force you with mandates to get vaccinated. And so when I look at this and I look at the SSRI stuff, one of the things that concerns me about the red flag issue is how the government is now going to go around willy-nilly pointing fingers at people that they don't like, that they think are dangerous. And we know how they label people as being dangerous. You know, people who believe that you ought to have an age of consent, people who believe in traditional marriage, one man, one woman. Those people are dangerous. They're hateful. They need to be shot, according to the SPLC. That's why the guy went to Family Research Center, Research Council, to try to shoot people. Because he had seen that the Southern Poverty Law Center had listed them as a hate organization simply because they believed in traditional marriage as Christians. And so when I look at the people that are they label as hateful and dangerous, their political opponents, will they be using SSRIs mandatory? You know, not a red pill, it'll be a pink pill. You know, that's the way Paxil is. They might pink pill you. We're trying to red pill you. We got more of that when we come back. Stay with us.
Using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We are going to get to the lynch mob that is coming after President Trump and the talk that the Democrats may be conducting a witch hunt. I'm not talking about what they're doing to President Trump. I'm talking about them perhaps looking into having Hillary Clinton run for office or some other witch. They started talking about one of the headlines said they're looking for a white knight. I said, no, they're not looking for anybody like me. They're looking for maybe a knight of color or whatever the female equivalent of a knight would be. They were never foolish enough to put women in those kind of combat positions back in the day. But we will take a look at that and we will get into the Washington, D.C. pearl clutching and so forth. But I wanted to focus first on what's happening to your kids, because this is trickle down tyranny, trickle down perversion. Yes, what they're doing to President Trump is denying him due process. Do you realize how long that's been happening to all of you, to your neighbor? Do you realize that there is absolutely no protection from this Department of Injustice coming after whistleblowers and other people all the time, taking children away without any due process, without any discovery allowed? can't even know why they've taken the kids because Hillary Clinton decided that the village would take your kids. And she incentivized that. So, well, we're going to do it to help adoption. And look, I think adoption is great. But you give parents due process. And this is being denied over and over again. Taking your property without any due process. Never even charging you with a crime. They just steal it and say, fight us in court. You can file a civil lawsuit. So we'll call it civil asset forfeiture. We're going to talk about all that, but I want to talk about where this meets your life right now and how they're coming after your family. So we see this expansion of we're going to force you to take vaccines. You don't want to take these SSRIs, these dangerous SSRIs, because even the FDA's put a warning label on there. We've been warning you about it for a very long time. But don't read that warning label, says Daily Caller. Just take your meds. And doctors, you're not prescribing enough of these things. Come on, step it up. Just like you did with the opioid epidemic. Come on, we can have more of these pills pushed on people. The pink pill, Paxil. They don't want you red-pilled. And if you are red-pilled and you don't want to take your measles vaccine or you don't want to take your HPV vaccine, then they'll just keep you out of school as a punishment. Well, maybe that's a reward for being aware, and maybe you ought to run with that. As we look at where this is coming from, of course, now this is being escalated, not only by California, but by New York. They're the ones who are using school as a weapon to force you to vaccinate your kids when you have issues with it. And some people have read the inserts, and so they have issues with it. Some people have ethical issues because they realize that aborted babies are used to create some of these vaccines, and so they don't want to participate in that. But they don't care what your moral concerns are. You will do what they say, just like the LGBT tyranny agenda. And so in Rochester, New York, a proposed bill, actually it's in Albany, this is coming out of the local news channel there, could soon require children to get the HPV vaccine to be able to attend public school or daycare, Oh, what are you going to do when you can't put a kid in daycare and you've got to work? Oh, well, they got you over a barrel, right? The HPV vaccine, says News 10, listen to how they spin this, is approved. It's approved. What's the problem? It's been government approved. The government always has your best interests at heart. And it's been approved for males and females, ages 9 through 45. You know, because we don't want those 9-year-olds getting any sexual diseases when they are, some pedophile gets their consent, right? We're going to lower the age of consent. You know, these kids, we can put them on gender reassignment, permanently alter them, chemically castrate the boys and so forth at an early age, but we got to be worried about sex for these 9-year-olds. And they said that it, listen to the way they put this. It prevents certain cancers. What cancers would that be that HPV is? Oh, that's right. It is cervical cancer. But we got to give it to males because, you know, I guess according to the LGBT doctrine, males could have cervixes too, right? Why not? This is the insanity that we've got here. And then further on, they say, well, many different types of cancer. A genital cancer. Let's not be too specific about this, right? Well, it's just, they won't use the term cervical cancer. They'll say certain types of cancer, genital cancer. Oh, let's not be specific because we want to give this to males because it will help the profit margin for the big pharmaceutical companies. We went through this song and dance in Texas with Rick Perry. Rick Perry, who had an employee who then left and went to work for one of the big pharmaceutical companies that was selling the HPV vaccine. And lo and behold, all of a sudden, Rick Perry wanted to take the lead in America by requiring kids to get HPV vaccines. And here in Texas, they nearly lynched him. I wouldn't have called it a lynching, quite frankly, because it would have been justified. A lynching is an unjustified execution of somebody. But you want to do that to your kids, that's grounds for lynching right there. Hang him high. Hang him high in Texas. He pulled that back. But now it's coming back with a vengeance. Again, in these places like New York and California. Rick Perry was ahead of his time. You got to say that about that. You know, it's He was a sycophant to the big pharmaceutical companies long before it became politically popular for the Democrats to do that. So the state senator who is now pushing this wants to make it mandatory. Some parents are concerned. One said, I don't think someone should be obligated to make their kids get that vaccine. Well, you know, you're just, maybe you're listening to Dr. Google. Shame on you for going to Dr. Google. Just shut up and go to Dr. Big Pharma and listen to what they have to say. And listen to the media that is financed by Big Pharma, Dr. Big Pharma. Let's make that clear. It's Dr. Big Pharma. Let's give them their proper respect because they are the authorities, and you should do what the authorities say, always. They always have your best interest at heart. And we have seen that with social media, you know, the authorities can tell you to administer an electric shock, and you'll do it to the point the person is screaming, even to the point where you're told that it's going to be fatal. That was the Milgram experiment. That was what the people, the Nazis, said at the Nuremberg trial. I was just following orders. Well, you follow those orders. You do what the authorities say, and don't you question them. And if you do question them, we have social media, where even when you know that it's wrong, if the majority of people raise their hand and give the wrong answer, after a while, 65-70% of the people will give the wrong answer that the group gives, the herd mentality. Yeah, it's a herd mentality. It's not herd immunity. Meanwhile, in this same New York district, you know, again, in New York City, they spend the most per capita on their children of any school district. And it's all these school districts like New York and Washington, D.C., where they spend the most per capita, like $22,000, $23,000 per student per year. That's where they have the 97, 98, 99% illiteracy and numeracy. And, you know, just throwing money at an issue or throwing money at the school teachers and school administrators in school districts like they do in New York isn't really helping. They've got more than 25% of the public school teachers and administrators in school districts just outside of New York City being paid more than $100,000 statewide. And this is information that was reported by the New York State Teachers Retirement System. They found that statewide, the percentage of these teachers and administrators who are earning six-figure pay had almost doubled in the last 10 years. Some of these superintendents, many of them, making $500,000 and up, between $500,000 and $550,000. And the top four were all in one school district. Imagine that. Imagine that. Meanwhile, in Pennsylvania, they have enough money to throw away that they're spending $2.4 million on gender-neutral facilities because we just can't do enough. Don't worry about educating kids, and we'll talk about what's going on with math when we come back. And Elizabeth Warren wanting to put transgender migrants immediately into the United States because, you know, no biological genders and don't do math. You might find out her plans don't add up. All right, so if the school is telling your kids that they can be any gender that they can imagine, and they can imagine genders that don't exist, then that's fine, and we will help you to transition even against the wishes of your parents. But what else are they teaching them? Well, you're sending them to school, and they're gonna know math, and they're gonna, you know, learn what they need to know in order to get a job and to survive in life, right? Well, no, not actually. As we see in Seattle public schools, they will start teaching that math is oppressive. And both Reason Magazine and Ron Paul have jumped on top of this story. This is a new ethnic studies curriculum. They're going to introduce racism and the intersectional political correctness nonsense. They're going to interject that into mathematics. So this is always one of the big advantages that we had as engineers. We understood there was a right answer. I was also raised that way by my family in church. I knew that there is truth, that 2 + 2 does not equal 5. And I knew that the people who tried to force that on you were trying to gaslight you. We didn't call it gaslighting at the time, but, you know, go back and see the Hitchcock film. You'll understand it. Nevertheless, this is a new ethnic studies curriculum that will teach students that, quote, ancient mathematical knowledge has been appropriated by Western culture. Oh, and it's not just cultural misappropriation. This is not just a way to shove down Western civilization and its accomplishments in order to deconstruct it, to devalue it, to deconstruct it, to disassemble it. No. It is also has other, even more sinister aspects to it. This is a school district that's there in the Seattle area. They have proposed, it hasn't been enacted yet, but it's been proposed to have a new social justice infused curriculum that would focus on, quote, power and oppression in order to give power to the schools and politicians in order to oppress your children. Also, the history of resistance and liberation within the field of mathematics. The Seattle four-page framework is still in the proposal stage. If the frameworks are approved, teachers would be expected to incorporate those ideas and questions into the math that they teach beginning next fall. And the really scary thing about this is not just that Seattle has gone off the rails. We all knew that, right? But this is a comment from the president of the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics, who said, Seattle is definitely on the forefront with this. Oh, yeah, we can all learn something from them, right? So the president of the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics says what they're doing follows, listen to this, the line of work that we hope we can move forward as we think about the history of math. Yeah, and deepening the students' connections with identity and agency. This kind of doublespeak has no place in mathematics. There is one right answer, and that's why they're doing this. Because really, mathematics really deconstructs it. That's why you had George Orwell make that such a key part of 1984. You have to repeat after us, 2 + 2 = 5. You know that that's wrong. But just like the Ash experiment, where, you know, the crowd can tell you it's the wrong answer and you're going to bow to the wishes of the crowd, or the Milgram experiment where authorities tell you, I'm telling you that 2 + 2 = 5. That's basically what's happening here. It's bowing to authority, doing the wrong thing, giving the wrong answer, even though you know that it's wrong. It's embracing that double think. And that's why George Orwell used that as a slogan, 2 + 2 = 5. They go on to say, the American conservatives comment on this, is that the young people who are going to learn real math are those whose parents can afford to put them in private schools or who care enough to homeschool them, whatever the hardship. Public school kids of all races are going to get dumber and dumber. Well, that was the design, right? We knew that was the design. Charlotte Isserby went to work at the Department of Education as Ronald Reagan became president. It was the newly created Department of Education. He had promised that he was going to disassemble it, and she wanted to be a part of that disassembly of the Department of Education. She realized that they were making it stronger. They were nurturing it into adulthood. And so she left, and with Phyllis Schlafly, she wrote the book Deliberately Dumbing Us Down to talk about what the purpose of the Department of Education, created in the late 70s, nurtured into adulthood by Ronald Reagan during the 80s, what the real purpose of that was, and now we can see it, can't we? You can see it very clearly. You know, when we talk about math, the new math really didn't work well for me, even when I was in school. They were trying to do a new way of doing math. You know, don't work a bunch of problems. Let's talk about it from a philosophical proof standpoint, and so forth. And it just didn't click with me. I couldn't see the application for it. When I decided I wanted to go into engineering, I was concerned because I'd never liked math. I'd never done well with math. I thought, you know, this is key. I'm going to have to be able to do math well, and I haven't been educated in the school. So I've got to double down with this and go deep in this, even to the extent of getting into trig. I really hadn't gotten through trig in high school. And so I thought, you know, I've heard a lot of people talk about how the new math is really getting in people's way. So let me see if I can go find some old math textbooks. And I went down to a used bookstore, and I was able to find a textbook that was used by the Naval Academy in the 1940s. And it was full of word problems. It was full of real-world examples. You know, you really need to be able to do a word problem, don't you, if you're really going to apply this stuff. Yeah, you need to be able to say, well, you know, we have on the horizon, you know, we've measured we know that it's a particular type of ship, and so we know that the mast is this high, and we've measured the angle. And so what is the distance to that ship? That type of stuff. Simple, Simple trig, but it really clicked with me. And so I taught myself trig using the old math from a 1940s textbook. You can do that to your kids. You just have to stay one step ahead of them. It's not that hard. And there are other people out there. Now when you look at homeschooling, there's a lot of support groups out there. That's one of the things that Ron Paul was saying. Homeschoolers are educated, not indoctrinated. There's a big difference. Don't confuse a system that we call school. Don't confuse that system with education. It's not. That's an institution. It's an institution that indoctrinates. You want kids who think, and an education is not the same as schooling. Take a look at the test scores that come out from the people where they shower the money on them. And, of course, a lot of that per capita spending is going to the school administrators and the teachers who are getting paid in New York. But as Ron Paul looks at this, he goes, just take a look at how they were encouraging kids to skip school, to play hooky, to advocate for climate change. This is a couple of months ago, right? It shows that the concern, if there's any doubt in your mind, it shows that the concern of the schools is really to indoctrinate your kids, and they can see that they're winning. The kids are embracing authoritarianism and socialism as embraced by the Green New Deal, the mandates and the communism. They're all a part of that. As they tell them, science is settled, and it's climate change, and the world is going to melt. And so you got to do what we say. And we got to take away everybody's freedom because your safety is concerned. So we got to take away liberty because of safety. And so now, you know, you have this math ethnic studies. It's going to replace traditional math with curriculum built around the idea that math is not an objective truth. And then they're going to apply economic, social justice, and racial and otherwise intersectional teaching to that. It's absolute insanity. And as Ron Paul puts it, it's the politicization. It's the dumbing down of government education. And he said there's a lot of sources out there. Talks about his own curriculum as well. Yeah, he's got a good curriculum, good homeschooling curriculum. You can find out about the history of liberty. You can find out about Austrian economics as part of the Ron Paul curriculum and government and history. One of the best books, by the way, you would enjoy this as an adult, but you should have your kids read this. A lot of people will read Little House on the Prairie, and that's a great series. It's a really interesting series. But the woman who wrote that, Rose Wilder Lane, who is the daughter of Laura Ingraham, also wrote a book called The Discovery of Freedom. That is a must-read for your kids. Get them focused on the history of liberty, and you can do that on your own. All right, we got to come up to a break. When we come back, we're going to get into politics. I know you're waiting for all the pearl clutching, and we've got lots of pearl clutching by the Democrats coming on the other side of the hour break. But if you want to keep this broadcast going, you want to keep this program going, folks, we really do need your support. And we've got great products that help you not only support us, support free speech, a free press, but also support your own health. I mean, ask Dr. Google, as the physicians would say. You can do your own research. Do your own research. And when you do, you're going to find out we've got very safe, effective stuff. And now we've got amazing prices, 40 to 70% off at InfoWarsStore.com. We have things like Survival Shield, X-ray Nascent Iodine, 70% off. Many other products, 50% off. Natural, safe, and effective. You get free shipping and double Patriot points, InfoWarsStore.com. And you can support free speech and your right to know at the same time. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. As crazy as things are, there's one story that I've had on my desk since Friday that I've wanted to play because it is a healthy dose of sanity. This is a, you may have seen this, but we're going to play the news report for you. A thief attempts to take a woman's bike. But then a cowboy rides up on a horse and lassos that thief. We're going to be talking about the lynch mob, the Democrats. But this cowboy used his rope, and I want you to hear this grounded guy, why he says he did this, It's just a breath of fresh air in the middle of all this insanity. Video clip number two.
28-year-old Robert Borba is one of the last of a kind. A real, honest-to-goodness, cow-roping cowboy.
Cash out.
Robert works at a ranch outside Eagle Point, Oregon.
Out.
But we didn't come here to see his prowess in the cow corrals. We came here because of what he did recently amongst the cart corrals of this Walmart parking lot.
It happened so fast.
A few months ago, Robert says he moseyed over to the Walmart for some dog food. And on the way out, he heard a woman screaming.
Stop him, stop him. He stole my bike. He stole my bike. And I kind of look around, you know, and then all of a sudden this guy goes whizzing by me on a bicycle.
As the security cameras show, there was no way to catch him on foot. So the cowboy did what cowboys do. He saddled up to save the day.
With his dog.
With little more than a lasso.
A couple swings and then I threw it at him just like I would steer.
He had to be blown away. Like, what is going on?
He's like, what are you doing, man? You got a badge? And I'm like, no, I ain't got a badge, you know? And
a lot of people were incredulous.
911, what's the address of the emergency?
We got a guy just stole a bike here at Walmart. I got him roped and tied to a tree.
What?
I got him roped from a horse and he's tied to a tree.
The cavalry arrived moments later, led by Eagle Point police officer Chris Adams.
I looked up, and from the horse, there's a rope connected to the ankle of a gentleman on the ground holding onto a tree.
So it's real?
It was real.
In fact, here's a picture. On the left, you can see the suspect on the ground, roped and tied like a steer headed for the pen. John Wayne couldn't have done it any better.
I'd take him by my side any day.
I told the cop, I said, man, you guys ought to pick up a rope and throw that gun away. You might have better luck with it. He started laughing.
What made you decide to take action in the first place?
I don't know. I just figured it was the right thing to do, you know. If it was my wife or my little girl, I'd hope somebody would help her if I wasn't around.
Heroes, like cowboys, are getting harder to find, especially modest ones like Robert, who want absolutely nothing in return. When it was over, police say all he asked for was his rope back. Coiled it up, tipped his hat, and then rode off into the yellow logo sunset.
All right, that's a great story. I love that. As a matter of fact, you see him as he's chasing down that guy. He's got his border collie that he went to get the dog food for at Walmart, you know, taking the lead on that. I'm sure that as he had that guy roped and tied, he probably had the border collie guarding him as well. But I liked what he had to say to the police officer. He said, I told him, you might want to throw that gun away. You might have better luck with a rope. Look, I'd rather have somebody rope and tie me than to be shot with a taser or a gun, which is happening all too frequently with the police as well. Talk about some non-lethal force using that rope. And it was also the key thing. I just wanted you to see that, just to understand that as we're going to get into the perverted deep swamp of Washington coming up in this next hour, that there are still people in this country that'll do things because it's the right thing to do. They'll do things to help other people. And that's what he was doing. He said, I wouldn't want somebody to do that if it was my wife that had been victimized by that, or my daughter who was victimized by that. That's what America is about. That's what we're going to return to. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. So let's get into politics. Let's get into the insanity. I mean, I was going to go into the self-driving scooters that are coming, you know, because we've got these scooters from Bird and Lime that are littering the streets everywhere. If you don't live somewhere like Austin, be thankful. But it's coming to you, too. Just like in California, I mean, people are tripping over these things, left littered all over the place. Says, oh, well, we got a solution for that. We will just have them come to you automatically on demand and so forth. It's like, oh, yeah, I can't wait for these self-driving scooters to be running into me and on the sidewalks or running into my car, whatever. Maybe we need some cowboys to rope these things down. It's like, come and get your damn scooters. Off of the road, off of the streets. That's really what we need. Anyway, we won't go into that. We'll get into Elizabeth Warren because she now, as I talked about in the last hour or so, talked about the insanity around the gaslighting, the transgender agenda that is being a part of the kindergarten and up crowd. And of course, she wants to jump into that as well. And it also ties into that story about making sure that kids in school are not taught math, but they're taught some kind of a ethnic, racial, feminist intersectionality projection of mathematics. So we're going to teach the history of it. We're going to talk about how math is beautiful and so forth. My friend who went to West Point said, yeah, we got two tracks of people who go through the curriculum. If you want to go into engineering or, you know, lots of others, you know, you take calculus and so forth. But then for the people who don't really want to do that, we have what we call math and science for artists and lovers. And they can talk about it in a general sense. Well, that's basically what they're doing. They don't want you to do math at all. You talk about the beauty of it, the history of it, the ethnicity of math. There is no ethnicity in math. They are deceiving you and your children if they put that through there. But Elizabeth Warren would not want math to be taught because if you do math, you might realize that her plans don't add up. You just might say, there's absolutely no way that we can do trillions of dollars, tens of trillions for this program and tens of trillions for that one and tens of trillions for that. We can't do that. And we can't provide universal health care for the entire universe, because anybody can come into this country and get it for free. We don't have any restrictions on the border. And so she combines all this stuff. Illiteracy, innumeracy, open borders, transgenderism. She combines all that and calls on the Department of Homeland Security to allow transgender migrants to immediately come into the United States. We don't have enough trannies. So get them in right now. Elizabeth Warren and Tammy Baldwin sent a letter on this last Thursday to Department of Homeland Security urging the agency to allow transgender migrants to remain in the U.S., even though everybody else has to go back while their asylum cases are being processed now. On the new rule. No. We got to put them at the front of the line. We need more. Don't have enough people like that. Maybe we can get the guy from Canada who just sued all, they just lost the lawsuit about all the salons. Maybe we can get him to migrate. Supreme Court is taking a look at the brainchild of Elizabeth Warren. The thing that she is so proud of, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Yes, the bureau that is responsible for more small and medium-sized banks going out of business. They went out of business by the hundreds. Drudge would list it every year after they created this thing. Look at this. We had 150 this year, 170 this year. Well, you know, he's not doing it anymore because they've pretty much gone out of business. They've been driven out of business because they couldn't afford the regulatory paperwork and mandates in order to write the loans that were their bread and butter. Now, the big banks could. The big banks that Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton helped to create in the late 1990s by removing Glass-Steagall, and by allowing the mergers that everybody said were going to create about, you know, a half dozen giant banks. And then they did. They let that happen. They took away the speculation stuff. And lo and behold, within 10 years, we had the meltdown of derivatives. And we had the banks who were too big to fail and too big to jail. And that was all the creation of Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. But now the Supreme Court is poised to strike down a major Obama-era agency, reports National Review. But this is really the brainchild of Elizabeth Warren. As a matter of fact, she was picked by Dodd and Frank, who put this together. Barney Frank and Chris Dodd. This was their parting gift to Wall Street and big corporations. You know, Chris Dodd is now with the MPAA, the Motion Picture Association out in Hollywood. I think he's still there. That's where he went. That was his golden parachute. You know, you do this kind of stuff, they'll take care of you once you retire. And so Dodd and Frank did that, and they wanted Elizabeth Warren to be the first person to run it. But the Republicans almost unanimously said, you do that and this thing's not going to go. Well, I wish they had shut it down for many other reasons as well. That was a good enough reason. This grasping woman who knows better than you and who wants to control everything. Let's take a look at this agency that she created. Because it was only one aspect of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. But it was the part that Elizabeth Warren was responsible for. As National Review says, the Supreme Court will now decide the constitutionality of an agency that's long been criticized, not just by the business community and free market-oriented politicians, but also by constitutional scholars who see major problems with its structure as a single director agency, seemingly unaccountable to the president or to anyone else. So this is a lawsuit that is going before the Supreme Court that was brought by a law firm that assists in resolving personal debt issues. And they started getting all kinds of paperwork and investigation and questions into their business after this was created in 2010 as part of the Dodd-Frank Consumer Protection Act. They created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So this law firm, Sila Law, I think is the way you pronounce it, argued that the agency structure was not constitutional. A federal district court in California, however, rejected that claim, as did the Ninth Circuit Court. They say, well, you know, no, the government can do anything that they want. We don't have any controlling constitutional authority here at all. And so now it's before the Supreme Court. And the interesting thing is that Brett Kavanaugh has a history with this that gives us some hope that this thing will be shut down. Why should it be shut down? As I've said many times, and as Rand Paul has introduced bill after bill every year, he introduces what he calls the Reins Act. You know, like the reins of a horse or something. To rein in the out-of-control government bureaucracies. Many people didn't understand, and I've pointed this out time and again. I'll say it to anybody who hasn't heard it or haven't heard it for a while. When Nancy Pelosi said, we've got to pass it so we can find out what's in it, Obamacare, what she was saying was not stupid. It was the way that Washington works. You're stupid if you don't understand what she was really saying. You're not paying attention, at least. Not stupid, but ignorant. Because what she was saying was that the way Washington has worked for the decades that Nancy Pelosi is there is that Congress, instead of writing laws, creates bureaucracies like this CPFB. And once they create this bureaucracy, the bureaucracy writes the laws, the regulations. They determine if you're guilty. They hold a trial and so forth. And so what Nancy Pelosi was saying, look, we're just going to create an Obamacare bureaucracy. We don't know what it's going to be because the bureaucrats will tell us. And guess what? When they write their rules, the government pretends that you don't have any presumption of innocence, that you don't have any protection against excessive fines. You don't have any due process in that process. Because it's not a law, it's a rule. It didn't come from Congress, it came from the bureaucracy. And they abdicated their responsibility to this bureaucracy. But I'm going to tell you what is particularly bad about Elizabeth Warren's Consumer Protection Financial Board when we come back. You will not believe how this moves the ball in the wrong direction. And hopefully it'll get moved back at the Supreme Court. So this Frankenstein monster that was created by Elizabeth Warren and Barney Frank and Chris Dodd, the Consumer Financial Protection Board, why is this thing moving the ball so far in the wrong direction as we have now become ruled by bureaucracies who are writing the laws for us and not our legislators. They have abdicated their responsibility. They don't have to take responsibility for it. They can come in and save us if these guys get too far along. They don't have to take a responsibility when they do the wrong thing. So it's great for them, but it's not really too good for us. Because it'd be better if our elected representatives were to do this, because then we could hold them accountable. But that's one of the ways that they avoid any culpability in what Washington is doing to our country. So what are the constitutional issues with this? What are the practical issues with this? What is the likelihood that the Supreme Court will roll this back? It's absolutely amazing, as we look through this story from National Review, I'll tell you why this thing is so much more dangerous than even the other bureaucracies that we've got out here. As I point out, the CFPB is the most independent of independent agencies. They have the power to make rules. They all do. They have the power to enforce the rules that they make up. They all do. They have the power to adjudicate violations of their own rules in their own administrative hearings. How's that? They're judge, jury, and kangaroo court, where you have no presumption of innocence, you have no protection against excessive fines, and on and on. So they make up the rules. You know, we have to create, we have to pass Obamacare to find out what's in it. Because once we create that bureaucracy, they will tell us how this is all going to work out. Nancy Pelosi was being very candid. She wasn't confused. She wasn't giving you double talk. She was telling you how Washington now works. We don't have a constitution anymore. It's important for you to understand that, because it's important for you to understand these people who rely on the Constitution for their authority. They pretend that it gives them authority. They swear to uphold it, and they've completely ignored it. They have no authority to do what they're doing. And so they also punish wrongdoers. And yet, the CFPB is worse than, that's what all the bureaucracies do, but the CFPB takes it a step further. Elizabeth Warren's plan. This really reveals the nature of this woman, Elizabeth Warren, her authoritarian, dictatorial nature. A single director heads the CFPB and can only be removed for policy priorities, they say. It doesn't even need Congress to approve its budget. Its funding requests are rubber stamped by the Federal Reserve, which also doesn't have any political control. Think about that. These are the three things that were added. We've had bureaucracies that have been operating for decades in Washington that write laws, that have their own enforcement, their own courts, and hand out their own penalties. You have the no presumption of innocence, no due process, no protection from excessive fines. And now what they've added to this with Elizabeth Warren's design, this gives you a clue about how this woman would govern. What she added was a single director, because these other agencies have commission. They have multiple people, multiple commissioners who are appointed, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. That's really not much of a protection. It really hasn't protected us, but she removes even that. One single dictator who cannot be removed. And they don't have to get funding from Congress. They get funding from the Federal Reserve, which is private, private. It says federal is Federal Express. The president appoints, but he's not supposed to remove. He's supposed to be independent and so forth and so on. And it is a private corporation operating for its own benefit. And now this became an arm of them. This was done by Dodd, Frank, and Warren telling you that they were going to stop abuses of the banking system. So they created an independent bureaucracy as a sub-branch of the Federal Reserve. You realize how dangerous and lying that is? It's why we call her Hiawatha. It isn't just about her DNA, but this is about her real DNA. This is the DNA of Elizabeth Warren. Doesn't have anything to do with Native Americans. It has everything to do with Marxism and socialism. As they point out, you know, the Constitution created three co-equal branches. They also don't point out in National Review, of course, that the Ninth and Tenth Amendment say that they were created by who? By the states who retained powers that they didn't delegate to them. They leave that part out. The founders were so concerned about power being consolidated that they divided the federal government into three parts and said, and if we haven't given you any explicit powers. You don't have them, and don't assume that you do. Don't assume that the General Welfare Clause gives you any power. Don't assume that the Commerce Clause gives you any powers. You don't have those powers unless we explicitly delegate them to you. That's why we had to have the 18th Amendment to prohibit alcohol. There's no authority for the drug war. There's no authority for the DEA, for the FDA, for any of the stuff that these people do anymore. And so, nevertheless, we wanted to have checks and balances. But during the 20th century, this is where they get it right, the federal government began creating independent agencies, typically headed by multiple commissioners who were appointed by the president. For example, the Security and Exchange Commission, or the Federal Communications Commission, right? And these are the agencies that have to do with managing or mismanaging the economy, picking winners and losers to some degree or the other. But when you look at the Federal Elections Commission, you look at the Security and Exchange Commission, they have multi-member commissions. And the Supreme Court said, that's okay. And, of course, the Supreme Court violates the Constitution all the time, as they did with their decisions on abortion and marriage and so forth. But so just because the Supreme Court says it's constitutional doesn't mean that it's constitutional. But what they said was okay was the fact that power was distributed between these different commissioners and that their terms, listen to this, their terms were staggered, so that one president is not going to appoint all the members of the commission. Now, with Elizabeth Warren's design of the CFPB, she made sure that that was all swept aside. One person. And, of course, after that person is appointed, you remember that the first director of this newly created Frankenstein sat down, and this wasn't that long ago. It was within the last year. I think it was at the very end of 2018. The first director resigned. And the person who was number two at that agency said, I'm in charge here. I'm in charge. And President Trump said, no, you're not. I will pick the replacement. She said, no, we have the power to do this. They say they don't report to the president. They report to the Federal Reserve. Now, President Trump asserted his power on that, I believe. I remember how that, I think it was resolved that way. But the bottom line, folks, is that President Trump needs to assert his power that way over the judicial usurpation of power as well, because the Supreme Court that we're now hoping is going to shut this thing down, the Supreme Court doesn't have the authority that it's assumed either. So we're hoping that one branch of government, which is assumed power that doesn't have, is going to shut down another, even worse branch of government that was created by Elizabeth Warren as a dictatorial agency. And we'll tell you a little bit more about this and why it might be Brett Kavanaugh that our hopes are resigning on at this moment. And also more about Elizabeth Warren and the witch hunt going on for another Democrat candidate. We'll be right back.
It's your move. And now, the David Knight Show.
All right, again, we're taking a look at the DNA of Elizabeth Warren, her political, philosophical DNA. Yes, she is 100% tyrant, and we can prove it from the creation of the CFP board. Again, not only giving all of the unconstitutional power that has been surrendered by our elected representatives to these bureaucracies, the power to regulate, the power to tax, the power to police, having their own court system. And now, unlike the SEC or the Federal Elections Commission, they created this agency with a single director that they believed was not answerable to the president, but could be replaced internally, and was funded by the Federal Reserve. This is what Elizabeth Warren did, along with Dodd and Frank. And so when we look at this, we look at the fact that, you know, the Supreme Court has said, well, we'll allow this. Yeah, well, you know, Constitution, we don't care, but we kind of think it's not too bad. No, that's okay for these other commissions that they've now passed on and that had multiple members. They said, well, you know, we've got limitations on how many members of a given political party can sit on the FEC or the SEC. at a given time, and they have staggered terms, so they get replaced by different presidents and so forth. But, of course, with this one, there is no staggered term. There is no term limit at all. This dictator that Elizabeth Warren wanted to be the first one, she was tapped to be the first dictator of her Frankenstein monster, the CFPB. And so what we have here with these people, folks, and I've said it before, we have with these bureaucratic institutions that have been given rule over us, we have taxation without representation, don't we? Oh, yeah, we do. They can set up all kinds of regulatory things and fees and fines and things that you got to pay to them. Does that sound familiar? Taxation without representation? But they added to that regulation without representation. Regulation without representation. And because they're regulations, they maintain the fiction that we don't have any due process either. Isn't that convenient? Isn't that special? So Warren was supposed to be the first director. Obama said, well, the Republicans oppose this, and we're not going to get this thing through if Warren is enthroned. So they shut that down. And so we've had a lot of different lawsuits go through the system in various ways. In 2016, Brett Kavanaugh, when he was a lower court justice at the U.S. Court of Appeals for D.C., had this to say. He said, other than the president, the director of the CFPB is the single most powerful official in the entire U.S. government, at least when measured in terms of unilateral power. That is how Elizabeth Warren designed it, with herself in mind. That is the DNA of a tyrant, if ever there was. Other independent agencies whose regulatory tentacles have entangled the American economy in recent decades, as National Review puts it, such as the Federal Housing Finance Agency, which the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit Court found unconstitutional just last month, have also faced court challenges. So we can hope that the Supreme Court is going to shut down Hiawatha Pocahontas' attempts to be the ruler of the world, or at least the big chief in Washington. And when you look at her economic policy of raising taxes, a new article out from International Liberty blog takes a look at research from two Stanford professors who found that, surprise, surprise, in California, as they raised taxes on the wealthy, that they saw the wealthy decide that they would vote with their feet and go elsewhere. They call it elasticity in economics. And what that means is that, it's kind of the opposite of what Arthur Laffer said with the Laffer curve, right? He said, you're going to get more tax revenue if you lower the rates. The Democrats take just the opposite view. Oh, we'll get more revenue if we raise the rates, except that you'll have people dropping out or leaving. What really happened, already happened in California. And it's what Elizabeth Warren and the big Democrats want to do as well. So Arthur Laffer is now laughing at his critics, whether he's alive or dead. I don't know if he's alive or dead, but wherever he is now laughing at these people. And final example out of California. The California governor there has asked the attorney general to investigate high gas prices. Okay, so they're getting gas prices as much as $6 per gallon in California. Higher than anywhere else. And they say that California drivers are being charged too much. And it doesn't have anything at all to do with their taxes, does it? When you break down the taxes, there's a federal excise tax, a state excise tax, state and local sales taxes, state underground storage tank fee, additional charges for compliance with cap and trade, and so forth and so on. When you add all that up, 98 cents is taxes on that gallon of gas. And 80 cents out of the 98 cents is coming from the state of California. Ah, but there's something else. There's also a mystery surcharge of another 28 cents per gallon. In January, a group of 19 state legislators sent a letter to the California Attorney General's office saying, we want you to investigate this. We don't know where this came from. Why is this surcharge being added on there? But they never got an answer back. The Attorney General's office says, we don't make public statements about investigations. We don't even know if we're investigating it. So they got 80 out of 98 cents of the taxes, California. And then there's another mysterious surcharge, but don't investigate that. Instead, says the California governor, we need to investigate price gouging coming from the oil companies that are actually producing something people could use. We don't need any more of that from the Democrats. As we move on to other politics here, we have a story at InfoWars, very important story from Adan Salazar, InfoWars.com. Bombshell, Google caught blacklisting Tulsi Gabbard. And this is something that was noticed by Steven Crowder after the debate, as people were Googling Tulsi Gabbard. Remember, on the Drudge Report, people picked her, 40% of the people on the Drudge poll picked her as winning the debate. More than twice as many as the number two, Andrew Yang. And then he had about twice as many as the number three, which was Buttigieg. But even though everybody was interested in looking at Tulsi Gabbard because of what she had to say about Syria and so forth, and this was before Hillary Clinton came out and called her a Russian. What Google did, they noticed that the day after the debate on Friday, that Gabbard's channel only appeared if you're using a VPN. That's a virtual private network. That's where they can't tell where you're coming from. It masks where you're coming from. So Google made sure that if you had an IP address inside the United States, you weren't going to be able to find Tulsi Gabbard. That's the bottom line on this article you'll find at InfoWars, breaking it down. So her channel did not appear on the YouTube search when it was accessed from IP addresses located outside the U.S. So that Friday, you searched Tulsi, trending number one on Twitter. All of a sudden, boom, the valve is pinched. You can't find her in the United States. But you can find her if you're in Germany, and you can find her if you're in Spain. But if you're in the United States, if it thinks that you've got an IP address in the United States, nothing. But you can find her if you've got a VPN and it doesn't know where you're coming from. They were shutting down any inquiries in the United States, this Google. And I've said before, and I'll say it again, that they're coming after the people who push back against the military-industrial complex, the police state, and the surveillance state. And it doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. It doesn't matter if you're a Trump supporter or a never-Trumper. It doesn't matter. Those are the people who got the censorship pull. That's why they pulled us here at InfoWars. Guess what? If you do a search on YouTube, you can't find me either. Why is that? Because they pulled the plug on years worth of work. I never got any explanation. I never got any notification of a violation. And they pulled it for the same reason they pulled all these other people, because they don't want you hearing anything that conflicts with what the real government, that is the military-industrial complex, the CIA, the NSA, want you to hear. They're going to control that narrative, and Google is going to control it for them. They were created for that purpose, just like Facebook. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In this final segment, we have President Trump holding a press conference talking about a brokered ceasefire that he's put together between the Kurds and Turkey. Let's go to that press conference now.
Well, thank you very much. My fellow Americans, I greet you this morning from the White House to announce a major breakthrough toward achieving a better future for Syria and for the Middle East. It's been a long time. Over the last 5 days, you have seen that a ceasefire that we established along Syria's border has held, and it's held very well, beyond most expectations. Early this morning, the government of Turkey informed my administration that they would be stopping combat and their offensive in Syria and making the ceasefire permanent, and it will indeed be permanent. However, you would also define the word permanent in that part of the world as somewhat questionable. We all understand that. But I do believe it will be permanent. I've therefore instructed the Secretary of the Treasury to lift all sanctions imposed on October 14th in response to Turkey's original offensive moves against the Kurds in Syria's northeast border region. So the sanctions will be lifted unless something happens that we're not happy with. This was an outcome created by us, the United States, and nobody else. No other nation. Very simple. And we're willing to take blame, and we're also willing to take credit. This is something they've been trying to do for many, many decades. Since then, others have come out to help, and we welcome them to do so. Other countries have stepped forward. They want to help, and we think that's great. The nations in the region must ultimately take on the responsibility of helping Turkey and Syria police their border. We want other nations to get involved. We've secured the oil, and therefore a small number of U.S. troops will remain in the area where they have the oil. And we're going to be protecting it, and we'll be deciding what we're going to do with it in the future. In any event, by the moves that we've made, we are achieving a much more peaceful and stable area between Turkey and Syria, including a 20-mile-wide safe zone. An interesting term, safe zone. That's the term we're using. Hopefully, that zone will become safe. Thousands and thousands of people have been killed in that zone over the years. But it's been sought for many, many decades, and I think we have something that's going to be strong and hold up. Turkey, Syria, and all forms of the Kurds have been fighting for centuries. We have done them a great service, and we've done a great job for all of them. And now we're getting out. Long time. We were supposed to be there for 30 days. That was almost 10 years ago. So we're there for 30 days, and now we're leaving. It was supposed to be a very quick hit, and let's get out. And it was a quick hit, except they stayed for almost 10 years. Let someone else fight over this long, blood-stained sand. I want to thank Vice President Pence and Secretary of State Pompeo for leading the American delegation so successfully to Turkey several days ago, along with National Security Advisor O'Brien. I want to thank them very much.
All right, so you heard the policy just there. Just to recap what President Trump said, they have now part of this ceasefire that's been brokered. He said that as a response, if things continue to go this way and, you know, there's not anything that pulls back, they're going to remove the sanctions from Turkey as a carrot. They're creating a 26-mile, what he calls a safe zone. And then he pointed out that the fighting has been going on there with factions for quite some time. We did not start this. He did not start it. As a matter of fact, he inherited this. And this is ethnic and political fighting and religious fighting that has been going on in that area forever, forever. That's why I call it our Middle East problem. We have meddled in these centuries-old rivalries and ethnic wars, and we go there to meddle in the Middle East, and our policy is nothing but muddling. We basically make everything worse wherever we go. I've actually seen people saying, well, you know, we need to understand that these people are like Saddam. I heard this on the way in this morning. People that are like Saddam Hussein or Muammar Gaddafi. And I say, well, your policy of regime change in Syria is like what you did in Libya or in Iraq. How did that work out for you? How did it even work out in Afghanistan? We're losing that war, our longest war. Afghanistan, where empires go to die. That's always been the case. British Empire, Soviet Empire, you know, you go there and get your head handed to you the longer you stay. It isn't, you know, you can go in with conventional forces and you can make it look like you're winning a war, but if you stay there to create a regime or to rebuild it or make that area safe for democracy, these people don't want democracy. It's not a part of their culture. It's not a part of their religion. A tolerance for individual rights and the system of justice that we have here in the West is based on the Reformation. It's based on Christian principles. It's not based on Islamic principles. And you're not going to get this established there. And so as we look at this, the thing that I'm concerned about is that the troops are not coming home, that we've got mission creep, that now we're going to be moving just to a different part of Syria, and we're going to be guarding the oil. Whether it is regime change or guarding the Kurds or guarding the oil, They can always find a way to keep us in Syria instead of bringing the troops home. The troops need to come home. We have a border that needs to be protected. The best way to protect it is with troops. That's why they are so adamant about having troops on the border between Syria and Turkey. So why can't we have troops on the border where just to cross the border, as I pointed out last week, we had a major firefight. It was worse than the phony firefight that NBC showed us. That was at a gun rally in Kentucky. Twice a year they do it there. This is a real firefight. And the government there lost. They had to hand over El Chapo's son. And you talk about the people that are being killed in Mexico with that literal war. It's not just a drug war now. The corruption and the powers that have been created there, we created that. Our government is not doing anything at the border precisely because they want you panicked. They have been able to panic you with the drug war. They've been able to panic you with the war of terror that they created with 9/11. And they now have both of those operating on the other side of the border. And so they want to panic you about protecting the border. They want you to surrender what remains of your liberty and your privacy. They're going to use this border war now to move the final step towards taking away your liberty and your privacy in the physical domains. They're going to use it to enact biometric surveillance and having to get permission from Washington to get a job. All these different things are going to be, you're going to see, as they already are, conservatives cheerleading that. Oh, protect us from the border. Well, you know, you could protect the border instead of creating that crisis that they want to use. Tulsi Gabbard, as good as she has been about attacking Hillary Clinton, talked about President Trump, said the Kurds are now paying the price. And the problem I have with Tulsi Gabbard's statement about this is that she makes this appear to be President Trump's issue. We were the ones who used the Kurds. That was the original betrayal. We used the Kurds as our surrogates. We armed them. They're Marxist-Leninist. They're intent on overthrowing the Syrian government, and they're just as they're intent on overthrowing the Turkish government, and we used that. And then we armed their enemies as well. And she goes on to talk about the hypocrisy of warmongers like Nikki Haley and Senator Graham. Yes, absolutely. But she won't name any of the warmongers in her party, like Biden, Pelosi, Schumer, and many others that you could name. That's the problem with politics, isn't it? That's the problem. Folks, if you want to keep this program on air, if you want to keep InfoWars on air, we are more endangered than the Kurds. We have been attacked by the biggest corporations the world has ever seen. All of them, all at once, taking us off. And you've been good to stand by us over the last, over a year. It was in August that they did that. And we understand that the reason that they're doing this is because we oppose these wars, because we oppose the police state, the surveillance state that they're putting in. That is the essence of this. That is the dividing line. It's not Republican, Democrats, not left and right. It's whether or not you line up with the Pentagon, with the military-industrial complex, with the NSA and the CIA. Folks, if you want to keep us on air, we really do need your support. And we've got great products, very effective, natural, safe, and effective, and discounted 40 to 70% off at InfoWarsStore.com. Free shipping and double Patriot points. Take a look at the many products we have. We've got things like Survival Shield, X-Ray Nascent Iodine, 70% off. BrainForce, 50% off. InfoWarsStore.com, free shipping. Double Patriot Point discounts in the future. Thanks for listening.